and I just learned the best spell of all.
What's that?
Sleep.
Or welcome back to My Alchemical Bromance. This is Eric Arneson, and I'm here at Belmont Station with Seda Selter, who is an ancestral healing practitioner and a professor of consciousness studies and dreams at the Evergreen State College. Hi, Seda.
Hello. Hi, Eric. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. Welcome back to Portland for a little while.
Thank you. It feels good to be back.
So, I've known you for a while. Over a decade, I think.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Or about a decade.
About a decade. And
Wow.
When I first met you, I didn't know that you were into any of this sort of weird stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were into weird stuff, but it was just uncommon. As in, like, you thought that men all looked like shabby assholes and should wear more suits.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
And now you... So how long have you been... So the dreams, I think you were into before, for a
yes.
long time. How did you get into that? When did you get into that?
I've always been into dreams. The former life to which you refer, where we met through my clothing business, mm-hmm. that happened because of a series of dreams. I started that business.
What?
You
dreamed your way into that business?
Yeah. So.
Okay.
That was me exercising my dreams through a circuitous route in my daily living. So I was exercising the power of my dreaming path through having that business.
Okay, so then the dreams guided you towards a business? Did you have...
Yeah.
Was it the sort of thing where you needed an idea for a business and it came to you in a dream? Or was it... Or did you have, like, a normal person job and then and then a dream told you, drop everything, go make some pants?
Yeah, well, it was kind of the latter.
Yeah?
I was having some health problems that were being solved in my dreams through a series of images and experiences with clothing and creating clothing, making clothing as being a healing thing. And I was naturally like, I need to make clothing in my waking life, not just in my dreams. The clothing, all this different kind of clothing was having really strong feelings and potencies in my dreams that caused me to really look into making clothing as a thing. And I went to apparel school and started out making clothes for myself and then vintage reproduction clothes for women that fit right. And then I got kind of tired of that and started to realize that men needed the help. It morphed. It certainly morphed around, but it was...
And we are all thankful for that. Those suits are
my
awesome.
Pleasure.
Those suits are super awesome. I guess, I feel like that might have been something you told me before, but I don't know that I realized the extent to which that's pretty impressive. Like, so you have trusted your intuitive side to make pretty big life decisions for you or with you?
Yeah.
Or it's your decision-making faculty?
Yeah, specifically my dreams. I didn't get into other stuff till a bit later, but... I've been really into practically following my dreams and synchronicities since I was a teenager.
That's
to great effect. I mean, my life has been pretty fantastic by my gauge.
Have you watched the Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency show?
No.
I've
not even heard of it.
Oh, well, so it's a book series that Douglas Adams wrote in the 70s, 80s, I guess the 80s, and they made a TV show out of it. That's not, like, super... it doesn't follow the book at all, but the characters, there's, like... Several characters have this superpower that... Where they're, like, I just follow the stream of the universe, like, the stream of existence in the universe, and everything just works out.
Yeah.
So you kind of did that. So you have a superpower, is what you're saying.
Yes, I do.
Dang.
I have a superpower.
Well, cheers. Good job.
Cheers.
Bit by a radioactive dream. okay, and then so the ancestor stuff is really fascinating. I mean, so can you gave... I mean, you talked about it for like an hour and a half, 2 hours today. I'm wondering if you can... Do you have an elevator pitch for the ancestor stuff? Because I have some, like, questions.
Oh, that's an interesting thought. I don't have one prepared, but I can give it a shot.
It could be a tall elevator.
Okay, numerous floors. So, ancestral healing, communicating with your ancestors. Basically, we all have ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
We don't come from nowhere. We come specifically from all the sexual couplings of all of the humans before us since the beginning of humanity and beyond. I mean,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
If we're really going to get down to it.
Right.
And
I guess maybe at some point, way in the past, some asexual reproduction. But from
Yeah. Certainly.
It goes all the way back.
Yes, it does. And as that is part of our heritage, I mean, I really see us as walking around embodying our ancestors at this point. We're the living representatives of those who have come before us, and we hold themselves in us through our blood and our bones and our DNA and our physical traits
and even our culture and items
and traditions
and like everything, right?
Yes,
like,
everything. And there's no line to be drawn between our inheritances physically and culturally and also emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually. So the kind of work that I do and I'm looking at is doing ancestral healing for intergenerational traumas that people are still carrying around from their ancestors, and helping people connect to the larger web of humanity that we are actually all a part of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot to be said about it.
Yeah.
But at the crux of it, like, okay, we can do healing in a cool, trancey state directly with our ancestors to increase our happiness, our luck, our self-esteem, our psychological well-being, as well as some family pattern problems and like long inherited things coming down the ancestor pipeline. We can do that, and it's exciting. And that's what I'm involved in.
Yeah. In the book that you helped work on, I read a little bit of it, and to try to get sort of an idea of what it is. And it's fascinating because...
Yes, and let me interrupt you. This book is Ancestral Medicine by Dr. Daniel Foer. That is the book to which you refer.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yes, great.
It's one of those things that you never realize podcast people say that often until you say it yourself. There'll be a link in the show notes.
Great.
It's fascinating because the technique that you're working with is fairly modern, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's fascinating about it is it has, I mean, I guess it has a lot of sort of approaches that are like in common with a bunch of other meditative techniques and inner working techniques. Some of it kind of reminds me, it reminds me of a ton of different stuff, but I was thinking in particular of like the concept of, have you ever heard of an egregore? Like it's like a group thought form an ancestral line could almost be like an egregore, sort of like along the same lines as that, or that's how it sort of felt. And especially like the way that the ancestors are split up, right? So you have like immediate ancestors that you can address individually, and then like long-term ancestors that get a little hazier. And then you've got like your distant past, like your cavemen and non-literate, like Neolithic ancestors who are running around making stone circles and chanting at things.
And they can teach us what that means,
which is really cool.
Yeah.
And then the ancestral guide thing.
Uh huh.
Is that outlined in the book?
Yes.
And how do you? Is there some sort of special ritual that you have to go through to do that? Or is it just like, as you work through the healing process, you come across one?
You explicitly, the first ritual beyond assessing what's going on in your ancestral lineages is inviting a connection with an ancestral guide, or it's one of your ancestors in a particular lineage that you're working with, like your mother's mother and all the females before her, say, we call that a lineage. So a lineage of women or females. You're finding you're finding an ancestor of that lineage, so in that bloodline, who is able, willing, and well enough to work on all the healing in that lineage. So, that is the first kind of step in the healing process.
And do you do that for each lineage? Does each lineage get... So you get like a...
So I have a battalion of ancestral guides who are all like cool ancient folks into all this cool different stuff that do healing in these different lineages and teach me things. And that can be yours.
Awesome.
It's amazing.
For 1995.
For 1995. This can be yours.
Yeah, that's... But I mean, even that is something that is... That like, that idea of sort of, like, collecting helper spirits and stuff, you know, is also really common in other traditions. And that's kind of neat, because it sounds like you guys... This particular technique makes it way more accessible or easy to get to that point. Like, you do it first.
Yeah, it's a pragmatic... It's a pragmatic access point to doing all this stuff, for sure. And, you know, it's exciting that there are these things in common, and the reason that these things are in common and you're seeing connections between these different esoteric traditions and this is because it's part of our heritage as humans to tap into this kind of stuff. I mean, it's certainly no surprise. It's exciting when you see explicit connections. And I believe a lot of my work in the world is helping to connect people with their birthright of accessing our gnosis,
and,
which is, I think, a great word for it. I like the Gnostic words a bit. Like, I like emanations. I almost always say emanations and things.
Well,
like,
you
I like
used
some
words in, when you were talking today. You used some words that I thought were pretty, like, imaginal. You know, that's a term that...
Yes, I like the imaginal realm.
I like the imaginal realm, too. It, I'm sad that we don't get to use words like imagination, since, you know...
Yeah.
We treat our culture treats imagination like a toy now, or something to be dismissed.
It's denigrated.
Yeah.
It's made up. It's make believe. It's,
but it's not.
It's not,
I mean,
valued.
It might be more real than what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so that was cool to hear you say that. I've heard that in other academic sources, academic stuff too. But yeah, and then when you were talking about like how you know, I mean, the imagination stuff really did start to diminish about 500 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, kind of 500 years ago this year.
Is this the anniversary of materialist dominance?
It is. It's the anniversary of Luther nailing his theses to the door, starting the Protestant Reformation, which led to, like, Calvinism and led to the demonization of the imagination as being, like, a form of idolatry. Ruined, you know, ruined religious art in the West by ending the Renaissance and destroying our relationship with our own imagination. It happened before we ever got industrialized. It happened like when we... I mean, I don't want to sound pro-Catholic, but it started to happen when we questioned religious authorities and we're like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But we threw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yes.
We got rid of... I could talk about this for a long time.
I could,
you're,
too.
You're the guest.
Yeah. No, I'm on board. I'm into this conversation.
But it's just fascinating that these things are actually coming back. And, like, the, you know, teaching people to be, like, confident with their imagination, I think, is important. And this ancestor thing totally has that.
Yeah. I've made it a point in my life based on my own... my own strengths and talents. I'm good with academia as far as I want to take that, and I feel the great responsibility to be one of the people bringing, like, legitimacy to the imaginal realm within the mainstream. And as far as I can tell, part of the mainstream is created in the cycle of creating knowledge and our own epistemology in the West of like experts and scientists agree. And then, you know, they publish stuff and that gets into magazines like Nature and Science and stuff. And then it's like, oh, we all know that. And I'm really interested in that cycle. And I want to see the righteous imagination become part of our valued intelligence more and more, and doing this ancestor work can really help because it's a way to tap into what that actually means.
Yeah, it's hard because it feels like there's still this like an ideological battle that has to be fought with materialism.
Yeah.
Like materialism
that's
wants
That's happening,
us,
though.
It is happening.
I mean, it's on. That's on.
Yeah, I mean, the big problem is, though, like, materialism has invented stuff like lasers and computers and the internet and we've got, like, you know, imaginary unicorns and stuff.
Well, if you're measuring it by materialist means, then they're always going to win.
Then you're screwed, yeah. Yeah, I was watching... I was at a talk by this Zen Buddhist monk recently, and he got a question from the audience about, like, measuring the effects of meditation and stuff, and he's like... And the monk, who was super down to earth, he's like, yeah, I mean, I know that those sorts of studies exist, but the thing about a spiritual experience is you don't need to have... It doesn't need to be measured. It just needs to be experienced, right? Like, we've lost the concept of, like, different types of knowledge and how they have their own place.
I think those measured meditation studies are great. I mean, the entry point, that's an entry point for people to see that something can be scientifically measured and has an impact within our current materialist worldview is powerful to people. That's why I like to talk about epigenetics and how that is... looking like supporting intergenerational trauma and healing ancestrally. I think that those neurophenomenological studies with the monks in meditation are massively impactful. Where it's, I mean, I get it. It's not, it shouldn't be necessary. It shouldn't be necessary to have to bring science into it because it just shouldn't be. But it is for a lot of people because science is real and not science is not real. I mean, that's basically where we're still
because we've flipped reality on its head.
Yeah.
We're pretending that the material is the real stuff.
Yeah.
Plato
would slap us hard.
Okay, let's talk about the beer for a second.
Okay.
Because we're drinking...
Yeah, what are we drinking, Eric?
Ancestry Brewing Oatmeal Stout.
We are. Cheers.
Cheers. I don't think it tastes like an oatmeal stout very much.
I was curious if it would taste like ground up bones.
Oh yeah.
But
or it would taste the way like a really, really old people smell.
It tastes like neither to me.
Yeah, it's really sweet. It's very sweet. And it's got a lot of like dark fruit notes to it, right? Like figs and dates and stuff. And I guess I just always think that oatmeal stouts are gonna be dry. But the name is cool.
Yeah.
Ancestry Brewing, which I think is kind of local.
Is it?
I think so. I think they're like in Estacada or somewhere. And they're in a suburb. They're in one of those suburbs that nobody goes to.
Is Estacada a suburb? I think they would reject that.
Well, I mean, they're pretty close. I feel like if you go down 205 and there's a sign pointing to your city, there's a pretty good chance you're a suburb. Except unless you're Hood River.
No, you're in wild Clackamas County down there.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I guess we'll have to... Wikipedia probably knows if Estacada is a suburb.
Estacada citizens might have an opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, Vancouver people say that they're not a suburb of Portland.
Right. We don't believe them, do we?
They still count it as a suburb. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe Vancouver people think they are a suburb and Portland people think they're not. And yeah, there's some disagreement somewhere. I read about it in Willamette Week, so it's probably true. And but they are. They're like statistically a suburb of Portland, just in a different place.
So is suburb an objectively measurable thing, or is it like in the realm of subjective experience, like meditation? Sorry.
You know, science has done a lot of study of suburbs, and and I think the consensus is that regardless of what science says, suburb is something that must be felt and not measured.
Okay. Right.
Okay, so, all right, I guess we need to rewind a little bit because I jumped straight into, like, all these questions and stuff before letting you explain what the ancestor thing was. So can you tell us about... the lineages. What are the lineages?
Oh. Yeah. So, doing the kind of... So, I work in this modality of ancestral healing that was created by Dr. Daniel Foer, who's nothing if not pragmatic, which I really appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
He explored a lot of different ancestral reverent traditions and experienced a lot in his explorations of spirituality and different religions. And this whole modality exists because of recognizing that there is an importance with a connection between us and our ancestors, those who have come before us, and recognizing that here in the West, I mean, maybe even particularly in this country, in the United States, we're really cut off from where we come from. And also, a lot of us are coming from a lot of different heritages.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's not like, I can go back to my Irish homeland, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If I have done a DNA test, I might have a suspicion that I'm 10% Irish,
uh-huh.
and 33% Western European,
yeah.
14% Ashkenazi Jew, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So, anyway, this whole modality was put together to be able to do some reconnective work with us and our ancestors, wherever they may hail from. And so when I speak of lineages, part of what that means in this context is your particular bloodlines, really. You could say bloodline instead of lineage mm-hmm. in this context and have that be accurate. So when I'm talking about in this framework, we tend to work with four primary lineages, which are your father, his father, all the males before him. So you're going down this bloodline of men all the way back through time. And likewise, your father's mother and those females all the mm-hmm. way back through time. And you're looking at them, each of these lineages, as a general energy, and you're literally rating them on a scale of 1 to 10 about their health to start out.
Okay.
This whole thing starts out with a rating system.
Sort of a health scan. Like you go in.
A health scan. You're taking the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
You're evaluating. You're not getting in the details of the illness, but you're saying, is there illness or is there health? What is this looking like?
And you do that kind of almost intuitively, right? So you enter into an imaginal realm, and then you scry. You basically scry the bloodline.
Sure. You could say
right?
that. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one way to say it. Yes. You are you're taking a peek through a lens in the imaginal, or I mean, one of the assumptions of doing this work is that there's continuity after death and you can communicate with those who have passed, and also mm-hmm. that can happen in real time. So you are in the present moment able to perceive information using your inner senses about the health state of your ancestral lineages. I know that sounds really far out.
No, it might sound far out, but it's not the craziest thing that I've ever heard.
Yeah. Well, and I was mentioning earlier, you know,
yeah.
I've been in groups and groups of people doing this, both as like participant and also practitioner. And I've probably been around in active process like this, like 200 people at least. And
uh-huh.
there's only been one time where someone wasn't like getting anything. You know, people are able to perceive these things, and it's quite fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's available.
It is. And it is totally like the imaginal realm. Like it's learning to kind of like trust your inner sight.
Yes.
Like, yeah, that's really cool. So you're actually helping a lot of people even just get that skill.
Yeah. I really see it as helping to really develop your inner senses. I like to say inner terrain, inner senses,
mm-hmm.
your perceptual abilities. I mean, a lot of people have different language around that. Like Rudolf Steiner had a whole freaking thing about helping people visiting higher worlds. Wait, what was his book called about that? It was...
I don't know, but Rudolf Steiner is like one of the granddaddies of modern Western esotericism, so...
Yeah, and you know why? Because he was a total badass about his approach, because he became this academic philosopher, highfalutin, respected guy, and then busted out with the fact that he's a prophet and sees other realms.
Yeah,
and that really worked for him.
And we still have, like, isn't there a whole line of schools still based on his teachings?
Oh, yeah, the Waldorf schools.
Yeah, the Waldorf schools are all, like...
There's a lot of biodynamic healthcare,
mm-hmm.
well, wellness care stuff beauty products and
Rudolph Steiner beauty products?
Yeah, I the Dr. Look like Rudolph. Hauschka skincare line okay. and Weleda. Those are biodynamic. No. Weleda and Dr. Hauschka were both started by Rudolph Steiner.
I don't know what either of those are, but I will Google them.
You can get them at New Seasons.
I personally...
Here, try this.
Oh.
This is
you guys,
best.
I'm going to get a Rudolph Steiner makeover.
That's right. you can smell that.
Okay. Okay, this is Weleda.
Yeah.
Weleda Wild Rose Deodorant. Oh, that smells really good.
Yeah. And, okay, I don't actually have it with me. But okay. there's a wonderful hand cream that's very healing uh-huh. called Skin Food. And it's the Steiner stuff is all biodynamically grown, meaning huh. it's harvested with the correct astrological cycles and all of that stuff according to his clairvoyant determinations and transmissions about when things should be grown and harvested.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's neat. I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I'm always really surprised when I see how much Rudolph Steiner has influenced modern culture. He's got a far-reaching influence. He did a really good job. Like, you compare him to all the other, like, big-name mystics, and the rest of them are all on the fringes.
He really did a good job in ingratiating himself and firmly establishing himself within an academy of people considered intelligent, and then mm-hmm. he went off the deep end in the coolest way with all of his, like, gnosis stuff.
I know. Good job, Rudolph Steiner, wherever you are.
Yeah, good job.
I wish he was one of my ancestors.
I don't know. His instructions are really daunting, though. I mean, he basically requires you to dedicate your entire life to pedantic exercises to develop your inner senses that are, like, pretty off-putting. Like,
well, I mean, that influenced a lot. Like, that's how a lot of, like, ceremonial magic is. There's a ton of, like, do this every day, do this every day.
Right.
And even when you learn it nowadays, like, they don't even really... You're not even really told up front... that you're supposed to trust your imagination. You know what I mean? Like, you're taught to, like, practice visualization. You have to be able to see these things in your mind. And it never tells you. It's your imagination. Use your imagination to form these images, and you're there. It's pretty fascinating. It's totally the hard way around.
That seems almost like a disservice, because I've noticed in working with folks on their inner senses, like, you will have something. It's always difficult to find language to talk about these things, like doing this ancestral work or mm-hmm. or doing different trancy things and even dreams, because people's internal perceptions can be a lot different. Like, it might not be visual, and people expect it to be visual.
Right.
Like, they
it can
expect
be feelings or
wild visuals.
Yeah.
Or clarity
right,
in visuals,
right.
But a lot of times it's, yeah, like you said, feeling, sense, or just this vague kind of knowing or guessing about something.
Yeah, it sometimes feels like guessing, or sometimes it feels like, or even, like, you mentioned it a little bit today, like the ability to learn what is you just making stuff up and what is, like, coming to you intuitively.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a little bit of practice sometimes.
Yeah. And it's not always discernible.
Yeah, sometimes it's not discernible. Sometimes, yeah. Yeah, so anyhow, I'm really happy that you're teaching so many people to do that. I hope that you your work leads to the downfall of the materialists, and that
yes.
they all go rot in their little materialist graves that we will not disturb.
That we will not disturb. We will make sure they become good ancestors. We're going to take care of those folks. No, there's a lot of people out there working mm-hmm. on this kind of stuff from different angles, and I think, like, the cultural healing potential of this is huge, just uh-huh. as we tap into deeper parts of ourselves.
Yeah, it's that kind
it's
of like the heritage guilt or the cultural guilt that we carry around, or even the cultural animosity that we carry around is...
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling when you stop and look at it and see how many problems in the world were not caused by... our generation, but caused by ancestors doing stupid things to each other. And now we have, like, religious wars and racism and social injustice and, like, everything, pretty much everything that is shit.
Right. Everything that is shit comes down the pipeline from our ancestors.
Yeah.
But what we're failing to recognize is that what also comes down the pipeline from our ancestors is a lot of knowledge about ourselves and how we see that is we see, or in our current culture, we think of ourselves as these individuals where we're like, oh, racism isn't my fault. I'm not racist. And, oh, that was someone else. That, and we don't own any of that because we're thinking as individuals. But one of the things we can learn from connecting with our ancestors is being connected with the stream of that and seeing that we actually can, we don't have to feel guilt about that. We can uh-huh. actually address those things and do work in the imaginal realm to help things improve in the physical realm by really reckoning with our own guilt and shame about our ancestors that we have rejected. Say, I'm talking as a mostly right. European ancestor.
Oh, person yeah, yeah.
Who, I know at least one instance in my own family history literally owned slaves who were black folks from Africa in this country. And that's not rare for
it's
European ancestry
yeah, people if your family has been here for more than 150 years,
yeah.
there's a chance. Sometimes a really good chance, especially if there was any money at all involved back
right.
then. Yeah, and I mean, like, I was thinking about that too. Like, my ancestry, I'm Norwegian.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't come over here. My family, I don't know when my mom's family came over. My dad's family didn't come over until like the 1880s. So there were no like American slave owners. But I know that probably further back, there were slave owners.
Oh, heck yeah.
Vikings
Anyone
loved slaves.
Ever, yes, yes. So
My Alchemical Bromance is sponsored by Miskatonic Books. Miskatonic Books is an online bookstore that focuses on rare, limited edition, and custom-made books of the highest quality. They specialize in books on the occult, ceremonial magic, Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, Hermeticism, and other topics of interest to you, our listeners. Check them out on the web at miskatonicbooks.com.
In any person's ancestral lineages, you can find the full array of human behavior as oppressor and oppressed. And that's a really beautiful thing about doing this work. Like, I can have this latent guilt about my white slave-owning ancestors in this country, like, relatively recently, or I can face a lot of stuff and understand how that can be transformed and mm-hmm. and worked with so that I'm not carrying around this perpetuated, skewed version of who I am, who my people are, and how I treat others.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I think it can be kind of subtle, but it can be pretty profound the way that you can achieve a sense of personal connectedness with the greater web of life, but with humanity and the struggles of humanity on oppressor and oppressed, and doing this work where you can really, really have a voice in conversations about cultural healing
uh-huh.
and bring on wise old guidance from folks who've been through it before.
Yeah, that is interesting. I was having another thought while you were talking.
That's so rude.
Sorry.
Just kidding.
It's my brain, right?
It's all right.
I might have eaten some marijuana this morning.
Oh.
But it was okay. That was a long time ago. I can't use it as an excuse anymore. But, I mean, okay, so first of all, like, every culture has had ancestor worship, except for, like, really recent modern Western culture, right? Like, ancestor worship is ubiquitous across societies and cultures and stuff. Like, it's everywhere.
Or communication with ancestors. Awareness
I guess calling it ancestor
support.
Worship isn't good, but veneration or acknowledgement
reverence,
of ancestors.
Ancestor reverence.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Or even like a sense of, like, cohabitation with ancestors.
Yeah, yes.
And I mean, who knows? Yeah, I mean, I was trying to think of, like, if there are cases of, I mean, like, do Catholic saints count as a kind of ancestor?
Sure.
And, yeah.
Well, the definition of ancestor can be very broad. In the sense, with this ancestral lineage healing work that I'm engaged in, we're specifically looking at
DNA,
your human bloodline.
Genetic ancestors.
Yeah, so we're looking at your, as I think of it as, like, a baseline level of human health and spirituality is is being well with your ancestors, making sure that they're well. And by those ancestors, I mean your ancestors of blood,
right?
And bone. Those whose DNA you carry.
I noticed that some people don't have a very easy time with that.
They don't.
They really don't want to have any connection with the ancestors of their blood.
No.
That's which I think is indicative of like some a serious ancestor health issue then, wouldn't it be? That'd be like, yeah.
Well, it's something, I mean, as shocking as it might seem, it's something we haven't given a lot of thought to in this culture. Where do we come from, and what does it mean to be in this body? What are, I mean, we recognize when, like, we have the same nose as our dad, or we don't know where we came from because we were adopted, or we only, you know, we never met our dad, but what is this, do I have his ears? Like, do I stand like him? Or we notice these things, but we don't really pay attention to what potential there is in the things that we inherit from those who we come from genetically and physically. About what kind of gifts we can tap into, what is that? Like, just what is that whole thing of being connected to people in that way? And it doesn't, doing that kind of focus on your blood ancestry as a practice doesn't in any way subtract from other things that you have as, that you consider ancestors, like ancestors of spiritual lineage, like saints.
Mm-hmm.
Those all have a lot of weight and...
And a different kind, yeah, so sort of like a parallel...
Yeah,
okay, that makes sense. Okay, so we really just haven't had... I mean, probably the only people who have cared that much about their ancestors then were royalty. Like, royal wines.
That's what we look for.
We're friggin' obsessed with it.
It's hilarious when, if you're an ancestral nerd like me, you watch all those genealogy shows... And you see people just freaking out when they're connected to a king or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's, we have this, like, show me what my worth is through the pedigree of my ancestors.
It's almost, it's materialism again. It's totally
right.
Are my ancestors worth having?
Right.
Yeah.
What
of course they're worth having.
Me?
They made you.
Yes. Yes. And do it really diving in into your imaginal experiences with your actual ancestors can be incredible. Like, if someone, like, some of the gifts that flow through people's lineage, that's one of the things that we look at, is like, what, when you engage with guides in your various lineages, that you do this basic relationship building, and one of those things is finding out about our people, like, what's up here.
Yeah.
And you can find out things like, sometimes people are like, well, there seems to be a lot about, like, cooking. Like, I guess we like to cook. Like, whatever. That's not very great. But then it's like, that is a major blessing. Like, cooking. Getting the food from the earth, preparing it around the hearth, and eating it for sustenance. Like, that is a gift.
Maybe those are people who have never been to a dinner party, and they don't understand. I mean, just, like, at the most basic level, like, the gift of being able to cook for others.
Yeah.
Like, it's the most awesome thing to do.
Yeah.
You know? You hang out, watch your favorite movie with, like, some incredible meal that you made, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And drink some wine or some beer. I mean, the oldest recipes that we know of in the historical record are beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'd like to get in on some of those dinner parties back then.
Bring your own mud.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have... Yeah, I'm sure your ancestors were doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, with the imaginal stuff, like, you were talking about developing the muscle. You use that phrase a lot. Like, the imaginal muscle, or the muscle of that... So that in our culture, we used to believe that... that perception, and in addition to, like, communication, entered in through the eyes.
Yes.
At which point it was converted into symbol that was fed into what we called the phantasmic faculty, or the imaginal faculty, which was an inner sense, which was the point at which your soul touched your material senses and accepted symbolic representations that were then transformed into your, that were shunted into your mind for, which was perceived to be, like, non-physical, right? Like, your mind was part of your soul, part of your subtle body. It wasn't
that's
even
still a problem if you look at consciousness studies.
I know.
That's the big problem.
I find that like metaphor to be really useful in terms of especially understanding like what imaginal vision is. Like imaginal vision is the way that your soul communicates with the material world, or your soul communicates with things beyond your soul.
Yes. It doesn't have to just be the material world.
Yeah.
But... yeah.
And so this is like one of the things I love about this particular metaphor is it makes communication into this incredible thing where your soul sends impressions through the phantasmic faculty into your physical body where symbols and forms and concepts are transformed into sound waves that then like smack against you, mm-hmm. and the process happens in reverse. Mm. Which is weird.
That's neat. That whole time I was imagining the kinds of drawings that would accompany that whole system schema.
Yeah, I almost think of it kind of like a funnel that comes down into your larynx or something like that. I don't know. I'm not sure or what that is like. Like all of your physical senses tied into this like translating matrix of material stuff to immaterial stuff that is like soul stuff, soul thoughts, or whatever the heck you want to call them. I like that a lot. And then you also mentioned the Yoruba, mm-hmm. a few times. Are they an African tribe, an African culture?
Yeah, I'm disclosure here, I'm not an expert in Yoruba culture or religion at all, but I have encountered it in several meaningful ways, mm-hmm. doing work with ancestral healing. And to my knowledge, Yoruba culture is, the Yoruba people are in Nigeria in Western Africa.
Okay.
And it's a culture, a very old culture.
Oh, okay.
And in the Yoruba religion are the orishas, which are the, you could say, emanations or representations of natural forces or deities. Mm-hmm. It's their pantheon.
Okay.
That are all very much tied to natural natural flow, like Oshun. Uh-huh. Is like a goddess or a deity of sweet water and honey and beauty and love. It's very mm-hmm. much like, I don't know, maybe like an Aphrodite type figure, but it's very, very tied to nature more than like the Greek pantheon seems to be, at least in my perception.
Uh-huh. Wait, which pantheon?
Like the Greek pantheon.
Whoa. That's misperception. Then.
In my perception.
Oh, okay.
See, yeah, you probably know a lot more about that than I do.
Yeah, they have some pretty intimate ties to nature. In addition to a very like animistic tradition of having gods of places and streams and mountains and rocks and rivers, like locally venerated deities that were very like animistic in nature. But mm-hmm. but the ones that get popular are popular because you know the materialist culture.
We need a love
teaches
goddess.
It to us, like Zeus.
Yeah,
I mean, you look at Zeus.
Yeah.
He's lightning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but okay, so that's... the Orishas... So that society, that culture is what fed, like, voodoo and Santeria and those sorts of syncretic...
Yeah,
Christian,
so,
African Christian yes, religions. Okay.
Yes, so you will find the same deities, the Orisha, in a lot of the Caribbean religions, but they've mingled with Catholicism and Christianity of different kinds by the point that they got brought there through the African slave trade. They were all of those religions that are influenced by the West African deities have a lot in common with the importance of the ancestors.
See, this is why I wish Nate would have been here, because he's way into that stuff. Nate's Ginger Gandalf. Our listeners know.
Ginger Gandalf.
Ginger Gandalf, yeah.
I like it.
Okay, hold on. So then this concept of healing an ancestral lineage, is there... What is that process like? Like, so I know that, you know, we didn't talk about this yet, but you're an ancestral, you call yourself an ancestral therapist? Ancestral...
No. I call myself a depth psychologist or an ancestral healing practitioner.
Right. We actually... That's totally cool. I totally said that right at the beginning. Ancestral healing practitioner. So what's the process of healing? What would it look like? So, like, if I came to you mm-hmm. and is like, my ancestors are janked up.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, okay, we're going to do this first practice where I take you into a light trance. You form like a protective barrier around yourself. You look through a window. And then you view each of your four beginning lineages.
Yeah.
And kind of get a feeling on them. Like, yeah. Those dudes are cool. They're all just, everything's happy. These guys were Nazis. That's a one.
Right.
So you basically like go through and rank all of them 1 to 10.
Yeah, and there's a lot of nuance in there too. Okay. And it's a guided process. So
you sort of walk. You would
I'm,
walk
I'm
me
not
through
just
it.
Like, all right, Eric, check those guys out. How are
do
they
think?
Doing?
What do you think?
Oh,
one
you
to
got
10?
Some Nazis. 1 to 10. Okay, cool.
Nazis. That's a one, probably.
No, we really. So yes, you nailed the process of the first step of the assessment step. But,
okay. But it's more
as part of that is really making sure it. Well, it's set up with an invocative support. So
right.
What
okay.
Some might call a prayer.
Yeah.
I tend to avoid
calling
that
it.
Can be a trigger word.
Yeah,
for people.
Yeah. So you call it
but
like.
But essentially, I'll usually say like a supportive. Intention or supportive invocation, and then I'll just like go into like praying to my ancestors in like Hebrew and but it's set up in a way that is actually a ritual container and we do go through the process that looks like a guided visualization process of surrounding you with protection and really being present in your body, and then surrounding, like, this isn't a journey to like go somewhere. Like a lot of people who are used to doing trancey stuff and maybe are like into neo shamanic stuff and are like going places,
right?
Like,
there's
leaving.
Always travel, pathworking. It was the same way where you like go someplace, you leave.
Yes. So this is, it can happen that you leave, but in this first process, it's like you're
just taking a peek.
And it's, yes, you're just taking a peek. And I like to say it's like you're looking through like a two-way mirror.
Yeah.
And we really establish this protection and boundary, and then have a window in the distance that you're looking through, and no one can look back at it. And that is because of safety. And that is a concern because we're all in relationship with our ancestors, but sometimes... especially if you feel like, if people are like, ooh, I don't know about this relating to my ancestors saying that sounds kind of edgy or scary. It might be because you're downwind of some like negative influence from your ancestors.
Some gnarly ancestors.
And there could be some gnarly shit back there. And so this is just a peek. So you're not engaging, you're not diving into any ancestral trauma you might have. You're going from a safe place where you feel comfortable and secure and supported, just taking a peek down these different lineages. And that's all a guided process of looking at it as a whole energy. And it's nice when you're in a kind of a trance state to have someone else be like, okay, now ask this, now do this. Like, it's very step-by-step instructional. So it's
almost like a guided meditation.
It is a guided meditation, basically.
Cool. Okay, And then you said, like, really early on, you look for the helper ancestors, the ancestral helpers.
Mm-hmm. So that's like phase two.
Do you start with the gnarliest line or the easiest line? Or you're like, we're going to start with the middle line. Then after we get some practice, we're going to do the super gnarly one. And then for dessert, we do the super easy one.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I started with the gnarliest.
Oh,
and
you did?
It sucked. It was hard. And it was heavy lifting. And it was, like, intense. And I don't usually recommend that with my clients. I tend to like to start with the easiest, most well-resourced one right now. Because then people get a sense of what it's like to feel some resource from their ancestors as working with a more easeful lineage. And I mean, it can be all over the place. Like, people could have two lineages that are like pretty bad, like really not well, and like one that's like medium and one that's like pretty good. Or they can have like all of them are great. I've actually never seen that so far, but
Do you ever get lineages that, like, merge? Where they're like, oh, crap, my parents are related.
Well, that inevitably...
I guess every lineage merges eventually. Yeah. They all lead back to the same root.
Well, and even if you follow how many people have to mate to produce children to produce our population, you don't have to go too far back for it to not work out mathematically. Like, at a certain point, and I'm not sure what those details are offhand, but there were small communities throughout most of history. I mean, ancestors were in small rural communities for millennia.
It wasn't until we started, like, expanding into the new world and stuff. I mean, like, for Europeans, we had tiny little communities for a super long time. That wasn't a super huge gene pool. It's more like a gene puddle.
I mean, I think we can all expect some level of incest in our ancestral lineages. Now, whether you encounter that in ancestral work or not is a different story. Like, I haven't encountered it personally and don't know of that many folks working through this process where it really comes up as a big deal. But if it's like significant lineages within a few generations, it might come up. And that might have been a confusing thing that I just said, significant lineages. And by that I mean different ancestral lineages might have a different level of impact on you right now. So, I mean, they're all significant in that they all contribute to your life.
Right.
But some of them show up stronger than others.
Okay, yeah,
that's
makes
all
sense.
I meant by that, yeah.
Okay.
I completely lost the original thread of that ramble.
Well, I started asking about, like, ancestral incest, but... And then before that, we were talking about which ancestral line you tackle first.
You
said, don't do the worst one first.
Right. So, it's wonderful to start with one that's pretty well off. Maybe the best one.
Okay.
And experience what that's like to have that support. And then very often, that... well, lineage will accompany the work with your other lineages. So if there's, like, a big, bad line of, like, terrible people that are just monsters all throughout time, and maybe have, like, curses and stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of shit that can happen here.
Right, like, you could just have a whole line of dentists.
Right, yeah. there, it's a great resource to get other lineages on board in wellness and really soak up
those.
So
then, once you get one lineage healed, it can help you with the next.
Oh yeah, totally. People experience that in different ways. Like, part of the end of the healing or repair process. I mean, this process is only necessary, by the way, because we're separate from our ancestors. This is the natural way that it should be with our ancestors.
So it's really we're really just at the point where we're putting back something that should have been there already.
Yeah, this is a reconnection thing.
And then, and then that's just the first step, right? Like, then the continuing step is that sort of continued relationship or reverence for your ancestors. That,
well, it is a relationship, and it becomes what your ancestors, their role in your life is to provide you support for your life, to give you insight about your destiny and your gifts, and to support that, and they do. I've never had such clarity of vision. I mean, it might be skewed because my ancestors are saying help people with their ancestors, but I know that it's not.
Yeah.
I've been in touch with my own internal senses and my dreams for long enough that I know that I'm stepping in the right way and in my life focusing on helping people connect with their inner senses and their ancestors. It's like, yes, this is why I'm here at this time. That's always been a mystery. That's one reason I got into, like, older aesthetics. It's like, why am I even here right now? I like this stuff back here more. It's been confusing to me to know why I'm on the planet right now at this time when I like some other times so much better, like, aesthetically and different. I mean, that's like a whole other
thing. I mean, that's cool. It was making me think about how, like, your intuitive path, following your dreams or whatever the heck you wanted to call it, led you to this stuff that helped you reconnect with old, like, it's very circuitous.
It is.
I don't know if I said that word right.
You did.
Cool.
Circuitous.
I'm going to give myself a gold star.
I agree.
but I mean, it's super circuitous. It's almost like you were put on the path, perhaps by yourself.
Yeah, sure.
Sometime in the future.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'm down with that.
But it's awesome. Like, it's very. I don't think I've ever run into anybody else who's done that. And I've talked to a lot of weird people.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's...
Or how about, maybe, let's put it this way. There might be other people who make that claim, but you never really get the idea that they got their shit together.
Oh. Yeah, I kind of know what you mean. I mean, there's a lot of people who are interested in, like, Jungian stuff and synchronicity and individuation, and there are all these different aesthetic scenes, and it's hard to find people who are walking the talk, and it looks different. I mean, basically, a great prescription through life is to literally follow your dreams by making whatever you can bleed into your waking reality from your dreams in ways that are safe. And I mean, this is like super...
No, keep going.
This is like fucking life 101.
Okay, let's hear life 101.
So bring everything you possibly can from your dreams into your waking reality that feels like something you want to do. Don't bring nightmarish scenarios that, if you feel like a good feeling from a dream, bring it in. Like, if you notice what clothing you're wearing in a dream, and you're like, oh yeah, I was wearing that shirt. Like, wear that shirt the next day. Like, do things in your physical life to tell your dreams that they're important. They will guide you more and more. Notice synchronicities in your life, and when you're noticing a lot of them, you're on the right path. Guide markers. They're like breadcrumbs.
Right.
And if you do that consistently, your entire relationship to cause and effect meaning in your life will absolutely change if it hasn't already. And like, ancestors are a huge part of that. I mean, like, so many synchronicities and stuff happen when you're like, oh, this amazing ancestral guide came to me. That, oh, we're people of the deer. Like, I guarantee you, in like a day, something will happen. Like, a deer will walk by and they'll be like, I've never seen a deer in my life. Or, so, I mean, something like that. Like, external world acts as a reflection of what's going on with us. And when we're doing what we need to be doing according to the doctrines or blueprints or Akashic record or whatever you want to say of like our highest path of our own integrity through our lives, the world reflects that. The world starts to pay me for doing ancestral work with people when I had a hard time making money before selling shoelaces, which I wasn't doing, and I don't know why I said that, but
maybe you
could have.
You had a shoelace ancestor.
I like
maybe
shoelaces.
A cobbler. You had an ancestor who's like a cobbler who broke his fingers, and so all he could do is sell shoelaces. And it's tough. That's incredibly insightful, I think. Like, that makes sense.
The mystics have been saying it for ages and ages. Like, everyone says that
But that doesn't mean that the rest of us are going to listen to
them. But it's easy to just do it.
It's
just
not easy to
do it.
You have to have a lot of trust. You have to have faith.
Or curiosity. You can have a lot stronger curiosity than faith, and then the faith develops.
Well, I mean, faith doesn't have to be blind, right? So faith can feed curiosity, but you have to have... And I mean, curiosity is a rare trait, too.
Okay.
I mean, you know that. Faith is... I don't know if faith is common or not, you know, but curiosity is not common.
Oh.
And
you don't
think? And fear is common.
Yeah.
Right? Like, a lot of people are more scared than they are curious.
Okay.
So they will allow their fear to tell them, I am going to follow the same path as everybody else.
Yeah.
Which eliminates a lot of the ability to, like, follow your dreams.
Okay.
Unless, like, you could probably wear your dream shirt still. But but a lot of the other stuff you probably don't get to do if your fear is telling you, like, this is the same path everybody else is on. It seems to be working for them. I'm going to do it, too. Even though it drives a lot of people into, like, this realm of, like, super deep unhappiness, they don't realize that that's not cool.
But it doesn't even have to be as heavy as all that. You could literally just remember some of your dreams. There's a lot of techniques for that if you don't already. And just enact little details from your dreams in your waking life and notice and start noticing what happens. It doesn't have to be a big paradigm shift. It causes a paradigm shift.
So that's an interesting idea. I don't think I ever thought about doing that.
Yeah, try it.
Okay.
Just any detail you notice. Be like... Just when you wake up, when you remember a dream, say, how can I bring that into my waking existence in any way? Maybe it could be you draw it. It could be just like writing down the dream.
Mm-hmm.
It could be drawing something from the dream. It could be like, I was eating spaghetti. I'm going to eat spaghetti today. Or it could be noticing what you wear.
Yeah.
Or...
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I have done that a little bit before, but only like in fairly serious ways, though. So, yeah. Like, one of my teachers, when I was going through a self-initiation path, I had a teacher, and I was talking to him. I was like, I had this super weird dream last night. And he's like, well, what are you working on right now? I was like, well, I'm working on this initiation ritual for myself. And he's like, use the dream. The dream is your initiation ritual. I was like, what?
Yeah.
So I did.
How did that go for you?
It was awesome. Mm-hmm. It was very powerful. It ended up being really, really good. Yeah, it was a crazy dream. There was like a castle. There was a like a dwarf. there was a lot of danger. It totally worked out. It was a very interesting experience. Mm-hmm. And actually, apparently, I remember my dreams pretty well compared to a lot of people. I never really thought of it that Great. Much, but a lot of people apparently don't pay very much attention to them.
Yeah.
So. I will. I'm going to try that.
Try it.
I'm going to try that.
Try
and see
it.
What happens.
Report back.
Okay, I will. I promise.
Try it. Do that. And while you're doing it, notice the synchronicities that pop up.
Okay.
Also.
All right.
So it's tracking. I like to think of this practice as like, it's like taking action on your dreams.
Uh-huh.
And a practice of awareness around synchronicity. So act on a dream and be aware of a synchronicity. They work hand in hand. And,
okay.
I mean, I'm sure everyone knows what a synchronicity is by this point, don't they? Or am I just in a bubble of Jungian?
I really hope everybody knows what a synchronicity is. I mean, people either have read Jung or they've read Robert Anton Wilson.
Okay. Well, we'll just say it. I need to say it because I don't want to be
a
freaking snob
okay.
and assume that everyone knows that word. It's a cool word.
It's a coincidence with meaning.
Yes. It's a coincidence with meaning.
Yeah.
Actually, meaning might not even have to do with the definition. That's debatable. What it actually means.
Actually, every coincidence might be synchronicity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something happening in the external world that you perceive that corresponds with something that happens in your internal world. It doesn't necessarily have to be rife with meaning, although most people think it does. I mean,
but it could also be, yeah, but the thing that happens in the external world might be like an interesting coincidence or a coincidence at all.
Yeah.
Actually, even just something you see. You're like,
or it
oh.
could be super boring.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it is a synchronicity if you think of someone and they call you right then.
Yes.
There's something happening in your internal process. You think of this person, and externally they're calling you.
Yes.
So it's the synchronicities enforce this hazy line. In fact, maybe nothing different about like your internal reality and your external reality. So like when you experience a synchronicity, at the very least, it's providing mortar for the bricks of the similarity and the sameness of your internal and external reality. It's like, oh, there's no explanation for that. Something just happened out there that corresponded to something that happened in here. What? And it's just like
yeah.
noticing those is how you work with them.
Right.
That was a bad analogy, but
No, that totally works. That totally. And I was thinking, but then sometimes there are also coincidences and things that are not synchronicity. For instance, there's yeah. a Vianne Stefan banner hanging on the wall here. And before I came to your class today, before I came to your seminar today, I had a Vianne Stefan vespier.
Oh.
Which you might think like, oh, is that a synchronicity? But it's not because Oktoberfest just ended, so people have like
right.
German stuff all over the place.
Right.
However, that is the oldest brewery in the world. It was founded before the year 1040.
Really?
It's over 1,000 years old. Well, it's about 1,000 years old.
So it's like as old as like 40 generations of our ancestors. 40
yeah.
generations ago, our ancestors, depending on where they were in the world,
oh, yeah.
they were in that specific
However,
region,
those guys
would have
probably,
known about it.
Those guys might not have had descendants because they were monks.
Oh!
So it's
blast.
Like dead ancestral lines.
Just but we're drinking it today. Not dead.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not drinking it right now, but
no.
now I want to.
It's almost time to get another beer. I wonder how long have we been talking? It's... Holy crap, we've already been talking an hour. Okay. Well, let's wrap up, and then we can just have normal conversation and
yeah.
drink normal beer. Okay. So, Seda, tell us where internet people can find you.
Oh, on the internet. I'm really excited. I'm about to bust out with my new brand. You want to hear what it is?
Yeah.
It's called Inner Lands. But it's not quite done yet.
Okay.
I'm being really careful with the logo and all of that. So for now, until I'm known as Inner Lands, it's just at seytaselter.net. And my name is SeytaSelter.net.
And you provide ancestral support in Olympia, Washington.
Yeah, and
most
of my clients are online. Like I do a lot of online Skype stuff too. Zoom stuff.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So then people can find you and like book intro thingamajigs and read your stuff about it and like get all hinky with their ancestors. Like they can.
Yeah, and it's also for a lot more resourcing too on the subject. Check out my teacher Daniel Fore's website at ancestralmedicine.org. There's a big community forming around this stuff, and
it's cool.
There are monthly groups in Portland working through doing ancestral healing together, and starting one in Olympia, and it's a cool community. So yeah, if you go to my website, feel free to reach out. I'm happy to talk to anyone, and just it's exciting when people are interested. So,
and great. You're a lot of fun to talk to.
You're a lot of fun to talk to too.
Well, thanks. So hopefully. I want you to come on the show again in the future, but
okay.
I want some of my co-hosts to show up.
Yeah.
We had a scheduling problem where we ran out of episodes, and we didn't plan ahead, and they can be difficult to plan stuff with sometimes, so I'm like, I'm just going to record without you guys, and they're like, all right. So that's why you don't get to meet them this time, but hopefully next time.
Yeah, sounds great.
Maybe we can get more into that dream stuff. I'll practice
a little
bit. Okay. And so this has been My Alchemical Bromance. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and like podcast thingamajigs. And you can find us on the web at myalchemicalbromance.com. And I hope that you come back next time and listen to more episodes. It probably won't be as cool as Seta, but like 80% is cool. Maybe.
I love it. I always enjoy it.
Well, thank you. That's good to hear. All right, now we have to clink our beers together and say Yahtzee.
Yahtzee.
Yahtzee.